So we'll read today from sixth chapter of second canto, entitled Purusha Shukta Confirmed, and we're going to read text 32. Please kindly repeat responsively. Sri Jami Tan Yuktoham Haro Harati Tadvasha Vishwam Purusha Rupena Paripati Trishakti Dri. Word by word translation. Sri Jami do create Tat by His Niyukta appointment. Aham, I. Hara, Lord Shiva. Harati destroys. Tatvishaha, under his subordination. Vishwam, the whole universe. Purusha, the personality of Godhead. Rupena, by his eternal form. Paripati, maintains. Trishakti Dri, the controller of three energies. Translation and purport by his divine grace is confounder Acharya by Charanaravinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. By his will I create. Lord Shiva destroys, and he himself, in his eternal form as the personality of Godhead, maintains everything. He is the powerful controller of these three energies. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The conception of one without a second is clearly confirmed here. The one is Lord Vasudev. And only by his different energies and expansions are different manifestations both in the material and in the spiritual worlds maintained. In the material world also, Lord Vasudev is everything, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7.9. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Everything is Vasudev only. In the Vedic hymns also the same Vasudev is held to be supreme. It is said in the Vedas, Vasudevat Paro Brahman Nachanyor To Stitatvataha. In fact, there is no greater truth than Vasudev. And Lord Krishna confirms the same truth in Bhagavad Gita 7.7. Mata Parataram Nanyat. There is nothing above me, Lord Krishna. So the conception of oneness as overly stressed by the impersonalist is also accepted by the personalist devotee of the Lord. The difference is that the impersonalist denies personality in the ultimate issue, whereas the devotee gives more importance to the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam explains this truth in the verse under discussion. Lord Vasudev is one without a second, but because he is all-powerful, he can expand himself as well as display his omnipotence. The Lord is described here as omnipotent by three energies, three Shakti Drik. So primarily his three energies are internal, marginal, and external. This external energy is also displayed in the three modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Similarly, the internal potency is displayed in the three spiritual modes, Samvit, Sandini, and Ladini. The marginal potency, or the living entities, is also spiritual, Prakritim Vidhi Me Param. But the living entities are never equal to the Lord. The Lord is Nirasta Samya Atishaya. In other words, no one is greater than or equal to the Supreme Lord. So the living entities, including even such great personalities as Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, are all subordinate to the Lord. In the material world also, in his eternal form of Vishnu, He maintains and controls all the affairs of the demigods, including Brahma and Shiva. So, dear devotees, here Lord Brahma is speaking by saying, by his will I create, Lord Shiva destroys, and he himself, in his eternal form as the personality of Godhead, maintains everything. He is the powerful controller of these three energies. So Lord Brahma is talking here on subject of origin, the origin of everything. Brahma is, besides that he heard the flute of Krishna, which revealed everything to him, he also saw Krishna, you see. That's why Brahma Samhita is composed by him, because he saw the spiritual world. He saw everything that is beyond the senses of an ordinary living entity. Like these verses, Chintamani Prakarasadma Sukalpa Vriksha Laksha Vritesu Surabir Abhipalayantam Lakshmi Sahasrasata Sambrahma Sevamanam Govinda Manipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. So Brahma is explaining how the spiritual world, there are unlimited transcendental trees, Chintamani, touchstone, Kalpa Vriksha, Chintamani touchstone is there, Kalpa Vriksha tree is there. There are unlimited cows there, transcendental cows, not mortal cows, like the cows in this world. And there is unlimited maid servants that are serving Krishna, assisting Govinda, the original person, Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So this is very interesting, that Brahma is a person who not only heard Shabda, Brahman, the Brahman, the revelation of Srimad Bhagavatam coming from Krishna's flute, but he also had a direct vision of the spiritual world. Which means that we can also, if we apply ourselves properly in the process of devotional service, one day we can also have the vision of the spiritual world and have a direct experience rather than just hearing about it eternally. Although on transcendental platform, hearing and seeing is equal. Still, one's pure hearing can turn into seeing. It's just like Krishna's senses, interchangeable. It's explained also in Brahma Samhita. Lord Brahma explains how Krishna's senses can perform all different kind of functions. He can see with his ears, he can taste with his eyes, like that. Krishna can do many different things with his senses, because they are not limited senses like the human senses. So the practitioner of bhakti can also develop this vision, this spiritual transcendental vision. And in fact, if you practice properly, you will develop this vision. You'll have this access into seeing the transcendental realm of the Lord. So in our tradition, first we follow the authority of Shastra, Shabda Brahman, then we accept Pratyaksha, sense perception, and Anuman, logic, is the secondary tools for confirming truth. In the Western civilization, the modern world, people trust mostly their senses and their mind, and they have very different world view and very different behavior because of how they perceive reality. Especially in modern days, theism has become more and more archaic concept. People throw it out of their lifestyle, theism or religion or any spirituality. And in fact, if you speak about theism, about God consciousness, they become uncomfortable, some of them. Because their idea of God consciousness is some foolish dogmas that segregate people, and some beliefs that are completely unscientific, impractical, and in fact self-defeating to the person who propounds them. That's what they think. Therefore, when they hear the word theism or God or religion, they just, some of the people get like, you know, uneasy. They get like disturbed. And many people, I'm noticing these days, if you ask them about their philosophical views, they simply will probably say, I don't believe in God, you know. For them, philosophy ends with the belief, you know. I don't believe. It just, they can probably give arguments why they don't believe, but people are more and more disengaged with philosophical thinking, and they're just thinking, they're using their thinking powers about how to make money and how to spend money, how to gain some immediate satisfaction from this world. So this is what they call intelligence nowadays. If someone can enjoy their senses very nicely, they think he's very intelligent, you know, he or she. So their thinking becomes extremely what we call one-dimensional. I am this body, this is my world, I live once and I die, so enjoy while you can, life is short. This is people's idea about reality due to this sense perception. It is very difficult. It is actually impossible. It is impossible to understand reality through the senses, because there is so many contradictions. Like one of the contradictions is that if there is God, why is there evil? A lot of scholars and philosophers, they have always had doubts about God when it comes to the evil in the world. Even modern scholars, professors in different big universities, if you know, sometime happen to be interested in this subject, you'll see a lot of professors, they speak on subjects such as origin, God, and they always stumble upon this concept about evil and God, and they can't resolve it with their mind, and they resort to atheism. They say, if God exists, then why is there evil? And if God was all good, like the holy books are saying, then why is there evil? And if God was not all good, why is there good in the world? That is their argument. If there is God and he's not all good, why is there, you know, if God is evil, for example, because there is evil in the world, why is also there good in the world? Why is not just evil, you know? Interesting. So they try to speculate, and therefore it doesn't make sense for them that there will be a good God and an evil world, or an evil God and something good in the world. You understand this? And then they say, there is no God. That is how they imperfectly speculate, because their senses and their logic is limited. But Brahma actually was fortunate to be very inquisitive, and he heard the word tapa, so he sat in meditation. And in that meditation, he got the revelation of the spiritual world, and he directly had the vision of Krishna. So this doesn't mean that only Brahma is qualified to see the spiritual world. We can also develop this consciousness and be able to enter into a direct experience. So today, actually, science is beginning to change, because you know, many scientists in the world are beginning to realize, with the advancement of molecular biology, they begin to realize that maybe it is not as simple as we thought, in a sense that there was just a big bang and some kind of accidental evolution happened and everything developed in that way. I read two theories recently published by scientists. One was called the theory of biocentrism, according to New York Times, scientist number 3 in the world, something Lanza, Roberto Lanza or something like that. So he has come up with this theory of biocentrism, and this theory is very, very interesting. He talks about multidimensional universes, and he talks about what is the most interesting in that theory is that he proposes that consciousness is the foundation of reality and not matter. Consciousness is the origin of matter rather than the other way around. Up to now, all the scientists have been proposing that matter is the source of consciousness. This is what modern science has been so far the past maybe 200 years. But this Mr. Lanza, he's saying that actually it doesn't make sense. It looks like consciousness is the primordial source and matter is an effect. It's an effect. Consciousness is the cause and matter is the effect. And he goes to explain that he have kind of even expectations, or for him it looks like there will be something like reincarnation, because he says when this body dies, the self or the conscious self that was animating the body, he speaks like completely Bhagavad philosophy, you know. The self has the opportunity to move into another universe and to adopt another body and then continue to exist through that body in a multidimensional reality. And he kind of hints of the soul and karma and many different things like that. So if anyone is interested, I will send you the article. So this is some new kind of cutting-edge research. And he's also physicist and astrophysicist, and also I think involved in molecular biology. So his kind of assumptions come based on his research, practical research, and realizing that matter cannot really, really produce consciousness. Another philosopher, I forgot the name of that man, I saw a few days ago, 80 years old, philosopher of atheism in America. He's now 80. And he has stated publicly to all his followers and whatever, and you know, people that studied under him, he's like a big professor. He stated publicly that actually with the advancement of science, and particularly the molecular biology, when we look at the cell and we see the intricacy of the cell, we realize that there must be a higher being to create such an intricate cellular constructs. It is not possible just that to happen by accident. So that was his idea. And then, of course, because masses are very easily influenced, now if big scientists are beginning to speak like this, the people will again start to consider the theistic perspective again and start to think about it and maybe revert a little bit towards more theistic research perspectives like that. So the thing with modern science is that someone else is doing the science for you. You see, this is the thing. You basically just hear what someone else's experiments are and thoughts are and you just blindly accept. While bhakti is a science that you can become the scientist yourself, you see. By just getting into the process, you get your own research and you get your own result, personal result. So that's the difference. That's why this process is so powerful, because it involves the individual to become a scientist, and there is no qualifications required, especially in Gaura Nitya's movement. In Lord Chaitanya's movement, there is no qualification. Kiba vipra kiba nyasa shudra keni haya sei Krishna tatva veti guru sei haya. It doesn't matter who you are, whether you're a learned scholar, you're a sannyasi or just an ordinary worker. Just if you know the science of Krishna, become guru. So Lord Chaitanya doesn't discriminate. Anyone and everyone can become a scientist and find research, this proposal of the scriptures, and when he comes to the conclusion and the realization, he can become guru, he or she, and can teach to everyone in this world. So you can see how much more natural is the bhakti science, because it involves everybody. The other sciences, you have to hear from someone who did the research and then you just blindly accept, right? This is what modern science is. Someone, such and such gentleman, did the research and then it is written in the books and then you have to blindly accept scientific books. And then you just... Some students may be able to do the research themselves in the universities, but the masses don't. The masses are just going to work, trying to struggle to make some money to meet their expenses. They are tired, they want to watch some TV at night. They want to enjoy their senses in some way. So they don't have time for this research, so they just accept. But when you come to Lord Chaitanya's movement, everybody has been turned into a scientist. Everyone. This is the scientific movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because everyone is involved directly on the research field. There was one saying before that science in Western world, science, Western science, in its inception was Christian. In its teenage, it became agnostic. Agnostic, yeah. In its teenage years, it became agnostic. In its adulthood, it became an atheist. And its in its old age, science will become mystical. You see, these are the gradation, you know. So in its early stage of modern science, it was Christian, because Galileo Galilei and Copernicus, they were Christian people who created the first scientific research, and gradually, people became more interested in doing scientific research than just believing the Bible. But then gradually, as this scientific field progressed, Hare Krishna, as this scientific field progressed, then science became agnostic in its teenage years. In its adulthood, it became an atheist. And now we're entering the mystical, the old age of science. Science will turn into mystical subject, you know, coming to mysticism. Understanding, in other words, that the eyes cannot see everything. The eyes cannot see the reality. And especially the contaminated or material eyes that we have. But by the process of bhakti, we can purify our vision. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. So when you purify your vision, you can actually see with your own eyes. You can see Krishna and you can see the spiritual world. And you can access this divine realm yourself, rather than just hear it from others. So, now there is one problem with modern science. Although they are coming to some kind of atheistic conclusions that there is God, and even the great atheist Stephen Hawking, if you heard about him, very, very great atheist, he's writing so many theories and so many thick books like that, and he confuses so many people. In his latest book, which was written, I think, 2 or 3 years ago, it was published, Stephen Hawking, the great atheist, he was interviewed by one journalist concerning his book, and the journalist asked him, "My dear sir, so you don't believe in God?" And Stephen Hawking said, no, actually, I do believe in God, but I believe in an impersonal God. You know, I just feel that God is just some force, energetic grid, energetic field, and from that field everything originates. So even this, Stephen Hawking has started to consider God, but in an impersonal way. So this is another form of atheism, because impersonalism is we can say the beginning of theism or Vaishnavism, but it's still pretty much an atheistic conclusion, because the jiva considers himself one with the source. Therefore, it is called atheism. So, therefore, it is not possible through the senses for a jiva to understand the reality alone, just sense perception and just anuman. You have to hear from an authority. You have to practice this process under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, and then your senses, both the sense of sight and the sense of hearing, can become purified so that you could actually access these higher realities, which will lead to transformation of your consciousness. Your mood and your actions will change. This is real mystical science, which upgrades the person, the scientist. While the scientist is doing science, he's becoming upgraded, you know. And modern scientists, when they do research, they're becoming degraded. Because they, you know, they propose some atheistic theory, and then they say the goal of life is to enjoy. So what can you enjoy in this world? You know, it's just drinking and eating meat and engaging in illicit affairs, promiscuous activities. So science is degrading the person, but bhakti science is upgrading the person. This is the interesting thing. And you can, a genuine practitioner, they can see how they're changing over a period of time, both in mood and in action. And this bhakti science is the only way for us to really understand what the origin is, because this bhakti science includes the interaction with spiritual master and also with other devotees. And when we see the pure spiritual master's mood and action, then we can actually perceive, or we can include the possibility that the Supreme Source, after all, may not be impersonal. And if it's personal, it doesn't have to be evil, and it doesn't have to be unloving or something like that. Because every personal experience we have in this world is always some, you know, pain is included in the personal exchanges, and some kind of hatred and some condescending attitude. All of it is there. But actually the spiritual master is the representation of Paramatma, you see. So when you meet the spiritual master, then you can experience what God is like in terms of dealing with you. And that is the mystery, and that is the turning point in one's life, to really understand the Supreme Source as a person. Now, if you just look at Bhagavad Gita, you'll see how Arjuna, he was a friend of Krishna. But the second chapter of the Gita, the first verses, their relationship shifts from friendship to guru-disciple. Arjuna willingly becomes the student, obedient student to Krishna by his own will, you know, willingly. And Krishna takes the role of a guru, you see. And this is how this process can actually become authentic. Or this bhakti yoga, this is the authenticity of bhakti yoga. When we approach the process in that way, then we can get the authentic results. If we treat everyone as a friend, you will not get the result. You will not understand how God is a person and how you are the servant of that person. You will not be able to. We have to come to the platform of Prabhu to see the other devotees as our masters. And by serving the spiritual master as well as the devotees as our masters, then in the process of doing so, we will experience this transcendental reality being revealed to us. Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktya maam abhijanati avam yashchasmi tatvataha tektvadiha punar second line, sorry. Anyways, the point I'm making is that by the process of devotional service, bhaktya maam abhijanati avam yashchasmi tatvataha tato maam tatvata gyatva vishyate tadanataram. You can achieve perfection by the process of bhakti. Only you can understand Krishna in that way. Not through the senses or through the mind. Here Prabhupada explains in this purport how you know, the impersonalists are confused. Because, yes, definitely there is monism. It cannot be otherwise. Everything has to come from one. And everything has to be one in ultimate sense. But that oneness is attained through service. Just a very crude example. If you go to just observe one company, how it functions. It's just an ordinary material company. And you'll see that in order for the individuals to be one with the company and reap the benefits of being in that company, they have to serve the company. And in that service, they become one with the company, right? But the moment they want to become the owner of the company, that moment they become put in jail. You know, if there is another owner, of course. So they try to become the owner and try to push the real owner out of the way. They become a criminal. So in the same way, this is just a microscopic look at on a macro level what's going on. So it's the same thing. If you want to be realize your oneness with everything, you have to engage in devotional service, because oneness is attained through loving service. There is a relationship between the two individuals. Prabhupada explains here that everything is Vasudev only, he is saying. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. In the Vedic hymns also, the same Vasudeva is held to be supreme. It is said that in the Vedas, Vasudevat Paro Brahman Nachanyo Rito Sti Tattvataha. In fact, there is no greater truth than Vasudev. And then Krishna confirms this, Mata Parataram Nyanyat. There is nothing above me, Lord Krishna. So the conception of oneness as overly stressed by the impersonalist is also accepted by the personalist devotee of the Lord. The difference is that the impersonalist denies the personality in the ultimate issue, whereas the devotee gives more importance to the personality of Godhead. So Srimad Bhagavatam explains this truth in the verse under discussion. So this is very important to understand the knowledge, the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is part of the scientific practice to hear and research. And then, like I said, the mood and the action change. Now I'm going to ask you to do some exercise today, and of course, hopefully every day. When you actually meet another devotee or another person, just observe yourself and try to see what is your consciousness when you are speaking to that person. Is it neutral, like, neutral consciousness, like you don't care too much about that person, you just greet him and, neutrally, kind of casually dealing with them? Are you treating them as a master, is the second, or are you treating them as you being the servant? Just observe your consciousness when you deal with another person. And then, this is part of the science, to be introspective. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said Vaishnavas are introspective. And Prabhupada also required from his devotees to be introspective. And when we actually have this careful internal consciousness observation of what this gentleman or this lady is doing, of yourselves, looking at this body, what is Vraj Krishna Das doing now while dealing with that person? You can actually see the body from outside, the consciousness even from the outside. This is also one of the practices in the Gita. The self-realized soul can actually see himself from outside and observe the actions of his body and mind. Yeah, you remember that verse? Krishna tells Arjuna. It's there. So when you actually look at that, then you can see where you're lacking and you can adjust the consciousness in terms of moving your consciousness from being neutral to others, being the master to others, to being the servant to others. And this is so wonderful that even if someone is in a leadership position, it's servant leadership. So the person who is leading, he is also feeling that I am the servant of that person and I am going to facilitate that person to execute their service. And in that way, even leaders actually have this realization, I am the servant. This is the servant leader consciousness that comes with the realization of the Bhagavatam. And ultimately, devotees, just by having this consciousness, they will know, Krishna will reveal to them how to serve the other person. If you have the consciousness of a servant, you will immediately spot the opportunities for service. Yeah, how to serve the other person. It may be the person may need some advice. You can give them advice. The person may need some medicine. You'll see that this person needs some medicine and you'll take care of them. The person may need some help in varieties of different ways. Or the person may just need a friend, someone to pat him on the back, and you can be the servant in friendship, like that. So But the position of the devotee is always, I am the servant of the servant of the servant. I am not the master of this person. And I am not the neutral towards this person. Like I heard one devotee recently, he was saying in the class that, you know, some strange philosophy was propagating that we are all equal and, you know, nobody is more important. We should not give importance to anyone, you know, basically, like, and basically everyone is equal. Don't give them any importance. But actually the real philosophy is, yes, we're equal on a spiritual level, that's there, but still that equality is that you are the servant and you see everyone else as master. So immediately there is no flatness. He was speaking almost like we are flat, and he was putting himself along on the same level with everyone else. You know, like I am equal to everyone and you are equal and we are all equals. No, you are the servant of everyone else. This is our philosophy, you see. So in that way you can actually practice bhakti and get access to Krishna consciousness and be enthusiastic and you'll see how you are actually happy in doing so and how others are becoming happy by interacting with you. This is the secret, to have the consciousness of a servant. And if we forget that, then we become miserable. If you want to be master of others, you become miserable. If you're neutral, you become lonely and depressed because you're not engaging with anyone, you're neutral with everyone. Just you don't have any rasa, any relationship with the devotees. And you'll probably go to material relationships after some time. But if you're the servant, if you look how I can serve this devotee, then this is the key to success. And I'll just conclude by saying that when I was in Vrindavan during Kartik, I asked Dinabandhu Prabhu, His Grace Dinabandhu Prabhu, I had the fortune to serve him for some time because, you know, at least to visit him every day and do some small things for him. He was not well during Kartik this year, so he asked me, please come and see me. Yeah. So every day I would go for half an hour to visit him. We can talk and, you know, see if he needs some water or something, you know, small things like that. And one day I asked him, Dinabandhu Prabhu, how do I make advancement in devotional service? And he said to me, you should just serve the devotees. So then I went away, and then I wrote on Facebook that Dinabandhu Prabhu told me that I should serve the Madhyam Adhikari. I kind of, Madhyam Adhikari, the intermediate devotee, because in my mind, I kind of twisted it. I mixed it with the explanation of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, given in Madhurya Kadambini, that you get the bhakti kripa from a Madhyam Adhikari, right? But actually, this was completely two different things. And, you know, I wrote it like this, and then immediately he saw and he corrected me. He wrote, no, I didn't say, you know, should serve the Madhyam Adhikari. Serve all the devotees, he said. Then I asked him again, why this is so? And then I had the realization that Madhyam Adhikari actually is the person who contacts you first and he plants the seed in your heart, right? But then when the seed is planted, you serve all the devotees. You're the servant of everyone, you see. And of course, under the guidance of the spiritual master, you will know how to serve everyone. And he said to me that because all the devotees possess Krishna bhakti, so just by serving them, your own bhakti will increase. Just like that. You know, without discriminating devotees. Just serve the devotees. If you see someone in need, someone is struggling with something, just help them. Serve them. And then with humility. And then you'll see that your own bhakti will increase in the process, because their bhakti will spill over unto you and your bhakti credits will increase more and more. like that, just by serving the devotees. So this was a very wonderful realization for me. And yeah, so this new year we can try, all of us, to implement this mood, internal mood. I am the servant. And when we see someone, we should be always eager to see how I can serve that devotee. Not just treat them neutral. How are you, Prabhuji, today? Are you okay? Did you take prasadam? Yes, okay. Nice to see you. And we just go. It's like a neutral kind of thing. And then the worst is, you know, how are you doing, Prabhu, you know? You are a rascal, and, you know, start to just criticize the devotee, try to control him in some way or whatever, without really inspiring them to serve Krishna. And the third one is, of course, the mood of service, which we need to adopt and keep expanding. This is how we're going to realize the words of Brahma, that actually Krishna is maintaining everything, and he's the controller of all these energies. He's the source of everything, and we are his eternal servant. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ananti Kori Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanande. So some comments or questions? Yes, Arjun Saka.
You were saying that people who are outside, they general masses, they follow the scientists, and they are just following whatever they say, but devotees are individual scientists themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But if you see individually also, for a person to begin practicing devotion, he's just following another authority, which are another person also following.
Yeah, but that is already part of the practice, to follow an authority. It is part of the bhakti science. It is not separate. Yes. But it is different because they are not trying to discover anything. We are trying to discover Krishna. They are just trying to enjoy their senses. And they follow the authority who authorizes that. But the devotees follow authority while at the same time they're trying to discover Krishna, you see. So it's not that we follow the authority for no reason, like they do. They just follow to enjoy their senses, that's all. They are not learning anything transcendental by doing so. They can probably learn after some time this doesn't work. That's probably the best they can learn from it. But we, it's different. You will directly see Krishna. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. That's the difference. It's a science. And you are becoming a scientist. They are not becoming a scientist. They are just blind follower. That's all. Until you get sick and tired of following blindly. And then you can actually take the position of research yourself. A devotee is here because he wants to know what is the truth. He is not just here to space out. I hope so. You know. So basically, every one of us is a seeker of truth. Atato Brahma Jigyas. This human form of life is given to us to inquire. You cannot say, compare the materialist to the devotees. The materialist is not looking for truth. Yesterday, I sat on the plane. There were two ladies, one elderly and one young lady, working here in Melbourne, and I just greeted them and I tried to see what kind of consciousness they have. So I tried to speak to at least to both of them a little bit, and then, you know, I could see that the older lady was sitting on the other side, so I couldn't engage. She probably would have been more person for the concert, conversation, but this young lady was completely like locked into some mundaneness. You know, she was working in some insurance company, and I tried to actually open up a conversation, and it was just not going anywhere. You know, I, like, for example, I asked her, you know, what is what is the most amazing thing you learned in this insurance company? You know, what is the lesson that I can learn from you? I asked her like this, so I thought, you know, she will get excited and we're going to start sharing. I thought she will probably ask me, what is the most amazing lesson you learned with this bed sheet on you, you know? And she never asked anything. She just said to me, you know, the most amazing thing I learned there was that I have to be tolerant of all the upheavals that are going in the insurance company. That I have to be cool-headed. You know, I have to just kind of tolerate all this. This is what I learned. And then she didn't want to get more involved. So modern people don't think. They don't research. They are not interested. They just want to know how to get the cash and how to spend it. So they are not scientists. They are fools. I'm sorry to say. But the devotee is not a fool. He knows that there is something to be learned. And therefore he's investigating. And although he gets from an authority, he's doing his own research. So Prabhupada said our movement is mainly descending, but it's also ascending, because when the knowledge descends to you, you have to apply it and then get the realization yourself. Prabhupada said everyone should fly their own plane, you see. So it's both. Achinta bera bera tattva is simultaneously descending and ascending, but the descending is the primary, because you cannot ascend unless you get revelation, you see. So like that. Is that okay? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Aniruddha Prabhu.
On this point of the servitorship.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a fact that we're all servants, but sometimes the role of servant means you become master.
Yes.
And have to tell people what to do.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or just master them.
Yes. Yes, that's the mood I was speaking.
Exactly.
Exactly.
I have this problem with the company, which is one of the particular words to me. This is, but they're all devotees who should serve. But we don't necessarily serve people and give them whatever they want.
Yeah, that doesn't mean service.
It's not necessarily good for them.
Yeah.
Or they may just be exploiting.
Yeah. Waste of time, yeah.
They become envious, or they are envious, they become offensive. So even trying to engage them, you have to be, you know, something like Narayana to be effective.
Yes.
So some people that we are not the servants of,
and
that's our service.
Yes.
Interestingly enough. So, you know, this mood of service has a lot of
nuances.
Yes. And subtleties.
Yeah, subtle.
It's not that we just go in and go, how can I serve you?
Yeah.
We should know by experience and by advancement. We should, this is what Guru Goswami teaches in technical instruction. We should know what our role and relationship is with various people. And so we know what our service will be.
Yeah. It's an art.
Sorry?
It's an art.
Well, it's an art.
Yeah.
But it's so important for us.
Yeah.
To know. And that's the major main character, actually. You know, Rick Bertrand says, we should come to the platform of the budget practice very quickly. Because in that role, we can determine who's advanced, who's not, who's a demon, who's being a demon avoid.
Yeah.
Who's a devotee? Make friends with them.
Yeah. My dear.
But then, that's philosophical, because there's Simeon, there's Eagles, there's June, there's a range there of Rajan. You know, who's innocent, how do we bring them up?
Yeah.
And of course, who's understood properly.
Properly, yeah, exactly.
Because otherwise, as a with servants, yes, they're devotees, they're servants, but that doesn't mean just because they ring up and say, oh, I want this, I want that, I want the other thing. But immediately you write that down in their to do list and go off and do it.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to know exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you have to be mature to understand these things. Yeah. Yeah. I guess what I was trying to say is that the mood of servant must be in any, like you pointed correctly, that even if you have to act as a master sometime, you still have that mood of servant, because you know that by engaging this devotee in a specific service that you may be doing to your spiritual master, to Prabhupada, and then that devotee is helping you and you are guiding him like a master, that is actually your service to Prabhupada.
Yeah.
You see?
Prabhupada, you know, was a servant,
yes.
He would chastise his disciples.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And even with apologies,
yeah.
It's my
service to do it.
My
yeah.
Service to you, you chastise because you're
yeah.
Full.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
If I don't do it, then I'm not doing my
his particular service. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this is very. Very good, I would say, a detail that had to come out. This morning I was asked to do the class, so I didn't even have the time to really distill everything properly, but I'm speaking about this because I noticed something, you know, generally, all over, wherever I go, that sometimes in our relationships, so to say, in our communities, we have this kind of almost like a neutral type of just hanging out, hanging in, but we're not actually trying to see, you know, how I can be, you know, impact or help this particular person that I'm interacting with, how I can be of some assistance. Yeah, yeah, impersonalism. Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody infected with it. So we just ignore.
Yeah.
Because it's like when you walk down the street.
Yeah.
And there are people, you want to say hello to them or something. I look away or
yeah.
Look down or I look really thoughtful.
Yeah.
Come on, mate. I'm here, you're there. Just say good night.
Yeah. Don't exist and he doesn't exist and
we conditioned to it.
Yeah, so
again it comes back to being if you're a Vajrayana Bhakta, then you want to make friends with everybody.
Yeah.
That's my realization after having taught the Nectar instruction again.
Yeah.
And I'll probably go and teach it again, get more realization. But really this point is so important for us.
Yeah.
To be personal with people as opposed to being impersonal.
Exactly, yeah. So there is variety within the each and every person, how to deal, how to treat everyone has got to have a different. May not be appropriate.
How many of us here have got a job?
Yeah.
So it's a number of aspects to be personal with others. Being personal with yourself.
Yeah. To know how to deal with the other people also.
And it changes too, especially because when you're young, you don't have the same amount of experience. When you're older, you're a bit more
relaxed. Yeah.
Or experience.
Yeah, you know, if someone says something ridiculous, you know, can you please help me with this or that? Then you can say, look, you know, I don't think I can help you with this, but maybe someone else can, something like that. And you can suggest, if possible, if someone else can assist the person, and in that way, yeah. But the mood always is that, you know, how I can, you know, serving means how I can contribute to this person's well-being, you know. So in that way, I was trying to stress this mentality, how I can be useful to this other person. And then it can come in. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that is the affectionate bhakti consciousness that makes us advance and makes others advance. So that's what I was talking. Yeah, exactly.
Especially when we're young, we're talking about who's living around here.
Therefore, there has to be some system, like Prabhupada has established system. And although it looks like a hierarchy, actually the very fact is that the leader is the greatest servant. This is what actually it is. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So it is like that. So although it looks from a material point of view like a hierarchy, some kind of a material position, but actually that position means the greatest servant, you know. So it's this is actually what bhakti is all about. So and my point was that if you study these scriptures and if you apply yourself to the process scientifically, like I was telling Prabhu, you will get realization of Krishna. You know, you will get realization of bhakti. You will get realization of your higher self. In fact, Prabhupada said, the moment you realize you are the servant, that is Swarup realization. You know, just that you are the servant of Krishna, that's immediately self-realization. The rest is detail. It's not so important. I think he was before. Sorry, Prabhu. Yes? Yeah.
Indiscriminately disrespectful, which is the blasphemy.
Yes, okay.
Discriminately respectful, which is the Kanishtha.
Yeah.
Only these people have respect.
Yes.
And everybody else is,
yeah.
You know, not okay. Non-existent.
Yes.
Then there is discriminately disrespectful, which is the Madhyama.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
He is discriminating on that respectful manner.
Yes.
And then the Uttamadhikari is indiscriminately respectful.
Yeah.
He sees himself as the lowest.
Yeah.
With respect to everyone.
Yes.
So from indiscriminately disrespectful to indiscriminately respectful, then the four.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's very practical. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very scientific. So this is what I'm saying, that if you study this, if you make the experiment of bhakti, your mood and your actions will change. You will change as a person. You will upgrade yourself. While scientists are degrading themselves, you know. In their science, he becomes a drunkard, woman hunter, whatever it could be. So like that. This is very powerful. Yeah. Prabhuji?
Yeah, I was thinking on the same thing, what we are talking about, that I feel satisfied when I can serve Prabhupada's mission.
Yes.
And devotees, and then all my senses, the Yuga Krishna service.
Exactly, yeah. Who said that? You saying this? Yeah, that's how you get that. This is personal realization, Mahatma Prabhu. Yeah, thank you, Prabhuji.
Because there is more humility.
Yeah.
The more you serve others,
yeah.
You want to serve your senses, then you become proud.
Yeah, you become proud, yeah. Serve Prabhupada's mission. So, yeah, this is the way to realize the origin of everything, which is unseen to the senses, and we cannot, through logic, we cannot really understand the origin of everything. Therefore, we have to follow authority, authentic parampara, and then we have to apply ourselves to the process to get that realization ourselves. This is what is required. And this is the example of Brahma himself, because he heard first from Krishna's flute, and then he basically, in the process of his tapasya, he had the vision of the spiritual world. And that will happen to all of you. You know, this is what Prabhupada has given us. It is not just eternal belief. Prabhu, eternally, you have to believe into something, and you know, that's it. You just have to. You will get the personal direct experience. And before you see this full experience, there will be many, many other realizations and other experiences that will be confirming the map that I'm getting closer. It's like if you want to drive from Melbourne to Sydney, and you have a map, and then you look at the map, and then you look at the signposts on the road, and then you confirm, okay, the map is saying this, the signpost is like that, okay. Then I'm getting closer, like that. So you know, it's a scientific thing, it's not some stupid belief, like people usually think religion is just a belief. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Gaur Premanandi. Aniruddha Prabhu ki. Thank you for the nice points, Prabhuji.